Welcome back to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ with Dave Bernstein.
Well, in an ordinary year, State Senator Brad Hawkins and our 12th District legislators would all be over in Olympia, but it's not an ordinary year. And so instead, Senator Brad Hawkins is with us from right here in town. So have you kind of adjusted to these opening days here being done virtually? How's that going?
Oh, it's been an interesting process, Dave, but I'm trying to fully embrace it. The good news is last night I was able to tuck my kids into bed, but then the flip side of it was this morning, because of all the snow, I was shoveling my driveway at 6 a.m.
Thought you'd get out of that, huh?
Well, sometimes when I'm in Olympia, I can, but not anymore.
Well, today might have been a day where someone that maybe would have had to drive over the passes to go participate in a hearing would have been stuck. So, you know, sometimes it's a plus, sometimes it's a minus, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, we're working through all the remote technology. We've tested things as best we can. We plan to have some remote sessions by floor debates, by voting on amendments and bills, but we also are going to be conducting all of the committee hearings this year remotely. I'll be meeting with constituents remotely. My staff are in three or four different locations. They're all working from their homes, but I think we figured out a way that we can still maintain the same level of constituent customer service that my office prides itself in. So I'm excited for that. Things have gone pretty well so far. So hopefully for constituents contacting our office, it'll be seamless to them or invisible to them. But there definitely are some challenges on the back end. And then tomorrow I actually have a hearing for one of my bills. It was the first bill to be introduced in the legislature this year, and it's one of the first bills to receive a hearing in the legislature as well. So tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., before the Senate Environment, Energy, and Technology Committee, my hearing on the hydrogen vehicles bill is tomorrow, and we have some people participating locally and then people from Toyota and all these things, and it's going to be interesting to see how the remote Zoom committee hearing goes to collect testimony before the committee. So I guess I'm on the bleeding edge of that with my legislation.
Well, hope everything goes well with the virtual hearing. Now, this is the bill, and if you can explain it, we talked about it a little bit last time that we had you on. In fact, Douglas PUD is trying to position itself. You had some legislation to help them in the past. They're trying to kind of get on the forefront of this. But tell us about this bill that the hearing will be about tomorrow.
Well, this bill is Senate Bill 5000, and it's related to creating a hydrogen vehicle pilot project and basically trying to get the state to extend the same sales tax incentive that's currently provided to battery electric vehicles to extend that same incentive to hydrogen fuel cell electric vehicles. Both types of cars emit no carbon emissions, and I just think it's important for the state to be technology neutral. And you're right, Dave. So a couple years ago, I partnered with Douglas PUD and successfully passed a bill to allow all PUDs to produce and distribute hydrogen. Hydrogen is a gas, H2O. So if you have H2O and you separate out the oxygen, you end up with hydrogen. And it has a lot of different purposes, but one of the purposes is for vehicle fuel. And Douglas PUD, especially during the springtime, has a lot of surplus hydropower electricity. And rather than letting the water just pour down the Columbia River, we might as well generate some electricity with that. And now Douglas PUD, 2 years later, is within probably about 10 months of being able to finalize its hydrogen production facility, which will be near Baker Flats in East Wenatchee. And so with the surplus hydropower, clean electricity, and then a hydrogen production facility, if we can start getting some incentives for hydrogen vehicles and maybe a fueling station in East Wenatchee, I honestly believe that we could be one of the best positioned regions on the West Coast, or perhaps in the entire United States, to become a demonstration region for hydrogen. We could have hydrogen vehicles, but also transit buses with Link Transit. We could have school buses with hydrogen, utility big rigs. We could use hydrogen vehicles for transport on the short-haul agriculture between the orchards and the packing plants. And so if you think about it, if we have the production facility and the fueling stations and everything's local and it's homegrown, it's going to be pretty cheap. Hydrogen vehicles get a really long range. Again, there's no carbon emissions, too, so there's environmental benefits there. But it could be a lot cheaper and have local access. So there's a lot of opportunities for North Central Washington with this. So before the committee tomorrow, I'm going to make the case for hydrogen vehicles and for our state to be technology neutral when it comes to creating incentives. But also, I'm going to sort of paint the broader picture along with my local stakeholders and Toyota about, you know, what we could do with hydrogen in Washington State. And it's exciting because I believe it's an opportunity for me to continue to make the case that North Central Washington has been and will continue to be leaders for clean energy. We were leaders with hydropower, clean energy, decades ago, and this is an opportunity for, you know, transportation sector for us to potentially be leaders as well.
Do you know what the representative who will participate from Toyota will speak to? Will they speak to how quickly hydrogen-powered vehicles are emerging, or just the nature of that person's testimony?
That and all of the technology for what they're doing. They're actually driving hydrogen vehicles in California. So the participants from Toyota will be speaking largely to what is happening currently in California. They actually have an extensive lease program for their hydrogen vehicles. So they're eager to sell some of these hydrogen vehicles into Washington because they're surplus to this leasing program. And California is the only state currently that has hydrogen fueling stations available because, again, you either need electric charging stations or you need, you know, some sort of hydrogen fueling station. But if we can just get one or two hydrogen fueling stations, and it's just like a gasoline pump. And the good thing about hydrogen vehicles is it takes about 5 minutes to refuel. Whereas, you know, to charge a battery in a car, it takes longer. And currently, the state of Washington only has 1% or less than 1% of its drivers driving electric vehicles. So what really happens when we scale that up, 5%, 10%, and we need a lot of back-end transmission infrastructure and substations. But if we just have a fueling station, we add that extra component to Washington State, we could be driving hydrogen vehicles in North Central Washington real soon. And if we get, like I said, partner with Link Transit maybe, get a couple grants for hydrogen buses or school buses, as long as they're driven locally and we have the production facility and the fueling station, there's no reason why we couldn't have so many of our local vehicles, whether they're buses or big rigs or other things, using our own homegrown hydrogen. The challenge will be if we want to take our hydrogen vehicles all the way to the port of Seattle on semi-trucks, well, then, of course, we would need hydrogen fueling stations along I-90. But there's so much we could just do locally with the bus fleets and other local government vehicle fleets and some of these other things. So what I'm really trying to do is use this bill as a way to sort of position our district to maybe, you know, be a leader and take advantage of some opportunities as the state tries to transition the transportation sector to zero emission vehicles.
State Senator Brad Hawkins, our guest here on the agenda, and Senator Hawkins sits on the education committee, and there's a issue that you're trying to address, learning loss. I guess I've never heard of the term expressed that way, but you know, if kids were going to school year round, as you've proposed a project for some school districts to participate in to try and tackle the, essentially it sounds like they're forgetting everything, and then the school year starts and you're spending a significant amount of that time with kids having to relearn things that they kind of lost over the summer months. So tell us about your bill that you're sponsoring.
That's right, Dave. And it's in part, you know, this whole concept of learning loss has become more prevalent and discussed as a result of the COVID pandemic, with the school closures early on, with online instruction that perhaps is not as rigorous or not as time involved as in-person in-building instruction. Many of the children from lower income families do not have the same opportunities as we've gone online. So we've essentially lost a good portion of the last year. And then we're going to end up in the summer months, and we're going to have 3 months off, and that's something we have every year anyway. And then the reteaching that occurs in the fall. Well, unfortunately, because of the COVID pandemic, we're actually going to have challenges catching up students all across Washington State and all across the United States, catching them up to their academic progress pre-pandemic. So this whole idea of learning loss, I think it presents the state of Washington an opportunity to think big and think about how we want to reform perhaps the school calendar, because the school calendar has been around for decades and centuries, but it's based on a agrarian economy where parents needed children to take a few months off in the summer to help on the farm. Well, that's just not the case anymore. And my bill that I've sponsored with the education chair is to create some pilot projects, 50 school districts, and the school districts, there's 295 school districts statewide, so you take 50 of them, you create this pilot, and you extend the school year for them from 180 days that the state currently funds to 210 days. So that's 30 extra days, and you spread those out over a 12-month period, and then we can begin to evaluate, you know, how those school districts do academically versus others. Another option, another provision in that bill is to take the existing 180 school days that the state of Washington currently funds and incentivize school districts to spread those same number of days over a 12-month period rather than a 9-month period. So, for example, they might need to take some more frequent breaks, but the breaks would be shorter, but creating a little bit of extra financial incentive for school districts to try to do that, we might be able to do that pretty cost effectively too. Take a 1-month summer break rather than a 3-month summer break, and take maybe a longer spring break, longer Christmas break. So there's different ideas for how we could apportion those current 180 days over a 12-month calendar. And for the school districts that want to participate in that type of program, my bill offers that too. And then after a couple years, we'd be able to collect the data and then report back to the legislature and see if this might be something we might want to do statewide at some point.
Let me ask you two things on possible pushback. What do you think the Washington Education Association is going to say? I mean, the teachers for the most part, are used to a typical structure based on the typical school year. A lot of teachers take jobs during that summer month or work on furthering their education, what have you. And so they're used to the one structure, and although this would be a project to at least explore, as you've proposed, 50 school districts volunteering for this, but this would kind of change that structure. What do you expect from the Washington Education Association?
Good question. I'm not exactly sure what to expect. I did reach out to them, and I shared that with them. Those school days would be funded, so school teachers that participate in this presumably wouldn't have to take summer jobs because they'd work year-round as teachers. But having this as a voluntary program is very important. And so if, for example, the bill does pass in some form, it might be amended as it moves along in the process if it does. But what it would do would really force that conversation at the local level with the school boards, the local superintendents, and the teachers' unions, and the community members. Because obviously there are a lot of adult issues involved in something like this, and that would need to be fully discussed at the local level, And then the school districts, in collaboration with their staff and community members and parents, decide they want to participate in this, and then they can apply for it. But there are obviously some challenges with wraparound services in the school district. I know a lot of the working families sort of rely upon school districts for student care, and they're accustomed to the summer because there's camps and other opportunities. But then when you pull them out of school maybe for 3 weeks in the springtime instead of one, that could present some challenges for student care and continuity across the family. But ultimately, the case that I'm trying to make is we need to think about reforms as we pull out of this pandemic. We're going to have a lot of challenges in the K-12 system related to learning loss. It's probably going to impact those students throughout the course of their entire K-12 or K-20 trajectory. And we need to, now is the time to kind of think big. If we're not going to at least think about and thoughtfully debate the school calendar now as we are coming out of this COVID pandemic, when are we ever going to do that? So we need to kind of work past some of those adult issues and really think about and put on the table what is in the best interest of our students. And if we had to recreate the system from scratch today, would we recreate it and take 3 months off every year? That to me doesn't make sense. So I'm challenging school districts to think about some transformational changes that could help our students and our state in the long term.
Yeah, where it's a matter of priorities, I guess, is what I'm hearing you say. Well, let's take the break here, and we'll come back with more with State Senator Brad Hawkins. There are some bills that will respond to the governor not calling COVID-related special sessions in 2020. Want to get your thoughts on that. So we'll come back here after the break with State Senator Brad Hawkins.
To hear previous editions of The Agenda, log on to kpq.com and look for shows under the On Air tab. The Agenda will be right back on KPQ or streaming on Alexa and kpq.com. Welcome back to The Agenda on News Radio 560 KPQ with Dave Bernstein.
And our State Senator Brad Hawkins with us, and there are going to be a number of bills that try to address whether or not the special session should have been called. And we ran a KPQ poll a couple of weeks ago on a couple of those, and I think the one that was probably the most stringent, which said that the governor had to call special orders in all 39 counties and that the legislature needed to be involved after 30 days and reauthorize them, probably was the most popular amongst the votes taken our KPQ poll. But the legislature requires, the Constitution says it takes two-thirds of majority in each house to call itself into session, and that wasn't likely to happen. And the governor also said that nothing would have happened anyway. So, but it's going to be a topic that comes up here in the session. There are some bills, and I think while we were talking off the air, you said even Democrats have proposed at least one bill.
Yeah, in fact, Senator Christine Rolfes, a colleague of mine out of Bainbridge Island, she is the lead Democratic budget writer in the Senate, and she, I think, took some exception to the governor's direction of all these funds that were provided from the Federal CARES Act during the break of the legislature. Because, you know, what happens is right at the end of the last legislative session was the beginning of the COVID pandemic. And the state constitution, as you mentioned, specifies when the state legislature will meet each year, because we're not a year-round legislature. We're sort of year-round legislators, but we don't convene, according to the state constitution, all year long. So then the governor had 10 months, you know, to issue all these top-down, continuous set of executive orders based out of Olympia. And when the federal dollars came in from the CARES Act, and the governor started spending all the money, we as legislators, and apparently the Senate's chief budget writer, you know, wanted to be a part of that. And so this bill would provide the legislature an opportunity to be involved with that if there was ever a situation like this again. And that, and that's really been the challenge, is that the state's Emergency Powers Act, the state's Emergency Powers Act never fully anticipated something like this, this nearly years-long or year-and-a-half pandemic, especially when the legislature would be out of session. So there are different ideas for how we could call ourselves back into special session. There are certain requirements, for example, currently in law that we could change. One, for example, is the governor, I think, should be allowed to issue temporary executive orders, but after, say, 30 days or 45 days, rather than him being allowed to just continue that on for another 30 or 45 days continuously, he should then be required to call the legislature back in a special session for the sake of the legislature approving the emergency order. So there's things like that where we can have some checks and balances, and I really hope that we can make some thoughtful reforms to our state's Emergency Powers Act this year in Olympia. I think there is support on both sides of the aisle, Republicans and Democrats, to do that. The question, of course, will be, if those do pass the legislature, will Governor Inslee sign them into law? And my case is, let's not make this about Governor Inslee. Let's make it about the balance of powers and whoever Governor Inslee's successor might be, you know, in the years ahead. So this is really about the long term for the state of Washington, not any one particular person. And maybe that sort of message might be enough to get some of these reforms across the finish line. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm looking at some information that says that there is a bill that provides lawmakers the first opportunity to weigh in on the economic reopening metrics, you know, the plan that we're in right now, to address the fiscal powers of lawmakers when you're not in session, but to address how the legislature can itself can call itself into a special session if the governor refuses to do so. There's a Senate joint resolution and then an HCR. And so I think those two, Senate Joint Resolution 8201 and HCR 4400, for those of you scoring at home, those are the two that kind of address the future, because you never know. We could get some other sort of wacky virus situation in the future. So our time grows short. I can leave you a minute for your final thought here before we got to run here. What do you expect over the next week or so?
Well, I was just going to say, Dave, you know, to that point too, is like, you know, maybe Governor Inslee wouldn't sign these, but who knows? Maybe President-elect Biden is going to tap him for some position, and by the time those bills pass, it's going to be some new governor. But, you know, what to expect this year, who knows? I'm just very thankful we're in 2021. I'm very thankful to be serving our district. And if constituents have any questions throughout this session, we pride ourselves in helping answer those. So I encourage everybody to reach out to me at senatorbradhawkins.org, and they can get all my information that way.
All right. Your hydrogen bill, can folks get a chance to watch that tomorrow when that hearing takes place? Is there a chance to watch that?
Yes, they can watch it live on Television Washington. And if you want to check in online, that's tvw.org. And you have opportunities to not only follow this committee hearing live, but you can also download it on demand later, or you can watch and monitor other committee hearings and floor debates and governor press conferences and all sorts of things through Television Washington.
Yeah, it sounds like maybe the Douglas County PUD general manager may be amongst those that participate in that tomorrow.
Yes, he will be. Also, Rock Island Mayor Randy Agnew is the chair of the Chelan Douglas Transportation Council, which is a council of local electeds doing transportation issues. And he is going to be representing the Chelan Douglas Transportation Council tomorrow, along with Toyota executives and other hydrogen associations and lots of others. You never exactly know who's all going to testify, but we have people lined up to do that, and I'm excited to share the message tomorrow morning, and we're off to a good start this year, and I guess we just have 103 days to go after this, so okay. I got to myself.
Well, we got to run. Thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks so much, Dave.
All right, State Senator Brad Hawkins joining us on The Agenda.